Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silica Cast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com. Today is Sunday, February 5th, 2006, and this is show number 29. The No Silica Cast is a tech geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Well, it's Super Bowl Sunday, so I'm actually recording early for once. I didn't think I'd have the energy to record after the exhausting work of eating Cheetos and, you know, watching Super Bowl commercials. I've heard there's a football game on too, but I've never seen it, so what's the big deal there? Well, you might notice a really attractive crackling sound going on in the recording. I've been trying for about 2 hours to figure out where it's coming from. It appears to be self-generated by my PowerBook, and I don't know what's causing it. I've turned off the lights in the room, I've unplugged the microphone, unplugged the headphones, unplugged the mouse. I even turned off the AirPort and the Bluetooth, and there's this just nice little crackle over everything. So I've experimented with a lot of different settings in GarageBand, and I think, what is it I have turned on right now? I have the AU multiband compressor. I don't even know what that means, but I put it on and it seemed to be not as horrible as it was without it. So I apologize for that. If I ever figure out what it is, I'll make it go away. So I'm really excited about how many people are listening. Over 2,000 people from 77 countries came to the site in the month of January. Isn't that crazy? I just love it. It really inspires me to work hard to make this better and better, like not having noise. And your emails with suggestions and ideas really do help me work to improve. So keep the great feedback coming. If you haven't already written to me, my email address is allison@podfeet.com. Well, it's time for a country update. 7 new countries joined the No Silica Cast listening audience just this week. We were joined by Chile, Cyprus, Estonia, Finland, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Yugoslavia, and Moldova. Head on over to the website at podfeet.com, where I've added links for all these countries to the CIA World Factbook, so you can look them up, see where they are, see what their countries are about, at least from the CIA's point of view. So one thing I've never done is really describe the computer setup at my house. I do all of my work on a 1.25 gigahertz G4 PowerBook. It's about 2.5 years old, but since Apple was held back so long on the PowerPC chips, it's pretty slow compared to a modern PC. That's why I'm so looking forward to the MacBook Pro I have on order. That's the new Intel-based Mac that has a dual-core Yona chip in it. For my husband's video work, I just got him a dual-core 2 GHz PowerMac G5, so he's smoking over there. He uses it to convert our videotapes over to DVDs, and he's done some beautiful work, really does a nice job using iMovie and iDVD. My son is the really spoiled one, though. He has an iBook and a PC. While I'm pretty slanted to the Mac side, I wanted to learn how to build a PC and really get a better feel for the Windows side. You know, I was kind of feeling left out on the whole virus spyware issue, since there aren't any for the Mac for the last 5 years at least. So Kyle and I decided to sit down and build him a PC. I was really surprised at how easy it was. I thought we had like a 3-week summer project to look forward to, you know, day after day we'd come home and work on it. But I was only able to milk it for about 2 days. And it wouldn't even have taken that long if I'd pushed in the wireless card all the way the very first time. Diagnosing that was what took the extra day. I do like having a Windows box in the house to test software on and to try to find tools that are analogs to the Apple tools that I recommend. And I like to see how my web work looks like coming out on the PC. While I was glad my son liked the PC, I was kind of bummed when I realized that he wasn't hardly ever using his iBook anymore. Then I got an idea. I bought him a KVM switch. KVM stands for keyboard, video, mouse. It's a switch that allows you to run two computers to one monitor, keyboard, and mouse, switching between the two of them with a simple keystroke on the keyboard. I chose the MiniView Micro USB Plus KVM switch from IoGear. It drives two devices with USB keyboards and mice, and it has its own cables built in and also supports audio, so either computer can drive the speakers. I chose this device because it supports both Mac and PC. You really have to be careful because most KVM switches are PS2, which would leave the Mac out in the cold. The model number on this one's probably easier to remember than that really long title. The model number is GCS632U, and it runs about $60 to $80. If you just type in that model number, you can find it in a whole bunch of places. As soon as I put that KVM switch in place, he didn't use the PC for like 3 months. It turned out what he really liked was having a nice monitor and keyboard at his desk. So now over time, he's evolved into the major spoiled guy. He keeps his iBook open on the desk for AOL Instant Messenger, and the PC is driving the monitor with his online video games, the best of both worlds. I've created a monster. And then, for no apparent reason, we still have our 1 GHz G4 PowerMac set up in my daughter's room, who's away at college with her own iBook. This machine is on the network, but I'm not really sure why we haven't sold it yet. We're having separation anxiety, I suppose. The good thing is that it has a really big disk in it. When I bought the G5, I was just planning on moving the serial or the ATA IDE disk drives out of the old PowerMac and into the new one, but it turns out the G5 requires serial ATA, so I was required to invest in even more disk. So I've got this machine with these huge disks, and I guess it's like a backup farm or something. But all we do is use it to shove video around. Sometimes we run out of space on video, even with a 300 gig drive laying around. So let's do the math here. When I get the MacBook Pro, I'm sure I'm going to want to keep my PowerBook around because it's really great to have a spare laptop for one is in the shop. I know that when I don't have my PowerBook, that's just horrible. I used to steal Kyle's iBook, but you should have heard the whining. So I'll probably keep that. And I should mention that my husband has a Windows laptop that he brings home from work, too. So that means when the MacBook Pro gets here, we'll have 7 computers for the 3 of us. That sounds a little bit excessive, don't you think? Oh well, enough about my obsession with computers. Let's talk about other people's obsession with computers. Oh, it's the beginning of the month now, so if you enjoy the No Sillacast, I'd sure appreciate it if you headed on over to podcastalley.com and vote for it. If we can get high enough in the rankings, even more people will find out about the podcast. I do have to warn you, they make it a little bit of a pain. When you click on vote, it makes you enter your email address, and that sends you a link that you have to click to finish the vote. This is to thwart spammers, so I do understand, but I hope it's not too much of a burden to get you to vote. I think last month we got up into the 600s out of 11,000 podcasts, so that's not too shabby. A couple of weeks ago, or maybe a month ago, I talked about how I had set up VNC between my PC and my Mac, and listener Alex is having trouble with using VNC on his home network, so I thought maybe I'd throw it up here, and if anybody has a solution for him, maybe you can post it in the comments section or send me an email, and I'll chat about it next time and make sure listener Alex gets the information. Let's see, he's running VNC server on his PC, and he's using Chicken of the VNC as the client on the Mac under Tiger. The problem is that the chicken freezes up on him, and the only way to get it reconnected to the VNC server on the PC is to shut his airport card, his wireless card, off, and then turn it back on again. He suspects that OS X is doing something to interrupt it. So, he's got the appropriate ports open on the router. And he also tried using VNC Dimension, which is the one I like. Not as cool of a name as Chicken of the VNC, but I know how to use it. And VNC Dimension crashes the moment he tries to connect. He's verified that he's only running the firewall on the router. He doesn't have the firewall turned on the PC or the Mac. And I asked him whether he's tossed out his permissions file, repaired permission and thrown out the plist files on the Mac side. But I haven't heard back from him yet. But if you have any ideas to help Alex, shoot me an email at allison@podfeet.com. I wanted to talk a little bit about video conversions on Windows for the iPod. Last week, I talked about my experiences converting movies to the iPod video format using Handbrake and Handbrake Lite, which are Mac-specific applications. I asked if anyone had used any programs on the Windows side. Listener Nolan wrote in and said that he had used Videora, but that it wasn't nearly as easy as the tools that he had used on the Mac, because you have to go through a bunch of programs instead of just one. I wasn't completely sure what he meant, so I checked out the FAQs, and there's a really nice tutorial on how to get the video into the handheld device from a DVD. They've done a really nice job at Videora of outlining each step simply and with nice screenshots. I think I know what Nolan's talking about, though, because the tutorial starts with DVD decryptor to rip the DVD, and then goes into Videora for the iPod conversion. The problem is that it's pretty unintuitive. For example, one of the early screenshots in DVD Decryptor says to click on mode and then on IFO. What the heck's an IFO? I've heard of ISO, which is the other option, but I've never heard of IFO. But anyway, after selecting IFO, you have to select file splitting and set it to none. What are they even talking about? I mean, the nice thing is they do have these screenshots and it says push this, click that, push that. But I'm seeing if you followed their steps to the letter, you'd probably meet your goal. But an awful lot of gibberish on the way, even for a geek like me. Wait, was I a nerd or a geek? I think I'm a geek. So the iPod video or the Videora iPod converter is a free application, which is cool. And Videora itself is a much more extensive product that helps you download and receive BitTorrent files, including setting up what they call season tickets, which allows you to set up your favorite shows to be downloaded whenever they come up. So that's a pretty cool integration. They also have an application called Videora TiVo Converter, which is a really odd idea. It lets you download movies from the internet and move them into your TiVo. It seems backwards to me. I'm always downloading because even though I paid for the shows on digital cable, for some reason I can't seem to reliably record shows on my TiVo, so I keep missing them, and I'm moving files the other way. But I guess everyone has different problems. So anyway, if you're on the PC side and want to convert video into your iPod and you don't want to shell out any money, you might want to check out Videora, but be ready for a lot of steps to go through. So I've really been encouraging you to convert to Firefox or an alternative browser to avoid the security problems of Internet Explorers, right? Well, tonight Firefox did something very spyware-ish, in my opinion. I was happily surfing away in Firefox 1.5, which was the latest version, when suddenly a window pops up and says, Firefox has just completed downloading an important update and must now be restarted so the update can be installed. What? How dare they? That's something I expect out of like a casino website, to install something for you, download and install without asking first. I checked in the Firefox preferences under Advanced, and on the Update tab, the default setting says when updates to Firefox are found, it's set to automatically download and install the update. Jeez, at least they allow me to turn it off and change it to ask me what to do when updates are found. But man, that really irritated me. I don't like people taking control of my computer and doing what they want to do. I'm too busy messing it up myself, so I don't need any help. I'm really displeased that Firefox would exhibit that behavior, but I encourage you all to go in and check that update tab and make sure it lets you do what you want to do. Over on the website, I've included a screen snapshot so you can see what I'm talking about and how to fix it. I've talked a lot about the word wiki in here, and I wanted to clarify a little bit what I'm talking about. You've probably heard the word wiki being bandied about and wondered what the heck it is. I'm so immersed so deeply in geek land that sometimes I forget that normal people don't use the same vocabulary. So I like to stop once in a while and step back and explain things. The one place you might have heard the word wiki and not been intimidated by it is the little shuttle buses that run around the Honolulu airport. They're called wiki-wiki buses. Wiki means quick, fast, or hasten in Hawaiian. A guy named Ward Cunningham used the word to name his idea for a type of website that allows users to easily, quickly, add and edit content and is especially suited for collaborative writing. What that means in simpler terms is that it's a website where everyone who wants to or who has permissions can edit the website, even changing what someone else writes. The most common well-known wiki is called Wikipedia. Wikipedia is a multinational encyclopedia that has been written by normal people like you and me to record everything you'd find in a traditional encyclopedia. A recent study did an audit of Wikipedia against a traditional encyclopedia and found very comparable error rates, with Wikipedia doing slightly better. You wouldn't think this idea would work, would you? You'd think people would vandalize pages, and they do. But because it's owned by everybody, people go back in and clean up after the vandals, and quite quickly. For example, someone vandalized the page for United States President Bill Clinton, and the defamation was removed in under 2 minutes. It's kind of like if every time a graffiti vandal struck out at a wall, every one of us driving by just had a nice bucket of white paint in our cars and we'd stop and erase the vandalism. I think it's a great example of how most people are genuinely good and we outweigh the idiots. A necessary part of Wikipedia is that there are people who monitor sections of the website. Let's say your specialty is in French Impressionistic art. You would monitor that section of the encyclopedia, and whenever someone posted to that section, you'd get an email letting you know that you could go back and check it out and make sure everything's okay. I think it's that oversight that really helps to keep things orderly. My understanding is that this is done entirely by volunteers. Wikipedia is available in 10 languages, and the English version has 954,563 articles so far. So go check it out at wikipedia.org. Hey, have you ever wanted to know how long it would take to listen to your entire iTunes library? Here's a little trick. Look down at the bottom of the iTunes window, and you'll see a summary of the size of your iTunes library, showing the length of time in days that it would take to listen to all your songs. Command-click this to change the display to a precise title showing days, hours, minutes, and seconds it would take. Not sure why you'd need this, but it's kind of a quirky thing to check out. The O'Reilly series has a bunch of cool tweaks for iTunes if you're interested. That's where I saw this, so check out the link in the show notes for more fun. Have you ever wanted to send a link to someone and it was so long, you knew it would word wrap in their email, and then when they clicked on it, you knew it wouldn't work, and then they'd write to you and say it didn't work, and you thought about how hard it would be to explain to them to cut it and paste it in two pieces, so you just decide, nah, I guess I can't tell the guy about this because it would just be too hard. Well, there's a really easy way to make a URL short so that you can email it easier. I think there's several services for this, but the one I like is called SnipURL. All you have to do is copy the long URL and then paste it into the window at SnipURL and hit the button that has a pair of scissors and says Snip. And voila, you're presented with a nice little URL to cut and paste into your email to your friend. Another cool feature is that they give you a statistic to show you how much smaller the Snip version, The one I'm showing pictures of on the website shows that the original URL was 55 characters, and they reduced it to 23, which is 42% of the original. I love statistics. SnipURL works in 5 languages. Check it out the next time you're faced with one of those long URLs. The next web link shows the creativity of people. Some Japanese folks have a Mac SE 30. If you're not familiar with the Macintosh's early days, that was introduced in January of 1989. And they have this thing running OS X. The way they did it is to wire a Mac Mini into the innards and actually drive the original monochrome display with it. This defies description. You've got to go see how they did it. Well, the URL is really long, and I'll put the real one in the show notes, but I could give you a Snip URL over the air. So check out this crazy Japanese mutant Mac at snipurl.com/m8lv. I don't know if these URLs expire after a while, so if it doesn't work for you, just head over to the website for the long, annoying one. By the way, they've got an entire description, both in Japanese and English, of how they did this modification, which I thought was pretty cool of them. It's important to me that you understand that I don't just love everything in technology. I only love it if it A, solves a problem, B, works, or C, shows a promise of something really cool on the horizon. For example, in the late 1990s, my buddy Ron and I would fool around with an application called See You, See Me. It was an early video chat program developed at Carnegie Mellon University. It barely worked, and we spent 100% of our time on it, adjusting frame rates, trying to get the audio to work at the same time as the video. Half the time, we had our phones up to our ears saying, well, okay, click on that screen. Well, what does yours say? Well, mine says this. Well, try tweaking it like that. Even though it wasn't functional for a normal human, every once in a while, we'd get lucky enough and actually see and hear each other on the other end with this thing. I loved it because it proved to me what was possible and what was coming, and I could see the future of where this was really going to be getting cool in the future. So I test all kinds of software looking for something that works well or something that shows the future. If you test this many things, you're sure to come across something that doesn't work at all. I just tested out an application called WebPhoto from ionize.org/webphoto. The idea is that you put an application on your Mac that will allow you to share your iPhoto library over the internet. You don't even actually have to have iPhoto on your Mac, just have access to an iPhoto library. So I downloaded the application and followed the web instructions at Ionize and started the service. It took 2 tries, but I finally the button that said visit site, stop being grayed out. And when I clicked on it, my browser spun for a long time and then timed out. Okay, try again, right? This time I actually brought up a screen on the web where I was supposed to change the iPhoto library by browsing to that folder on my machine, and that did appear to work. But then they cautioned that I should change the administrator password. Even though I was on the site administration page, I couldn't find a place to change the password. Any link I found, when I clicked on it, it opened up another window that was a duplicate of the one I just left. Again, I would be looking at the site administration password. I tried about four or five different links on the page, and I just kept getting these same windows. It sounds like WebPhoto is kind of an interesting idea, but I'm not sure it's ready for prime time if a bleeding edger like me can't figure it out. I probably spent 20 minutes on it, and I just simply could not crack the code. If anyone sees that I was just being simple-minded and missed it, which, hey, it happens. Remember that whole story about not pushing the card in hard enough on my PC? Well, if you do find out I was being simple-minded, send me an email at allison@podfeet.com and set me straight. I'd hate to pan someone's software when it was just operator trouble, but I'm usually reasonably clever at this kind of thing. My purpose in reviewing this software was to let you know that I don't have completely rose-colored glasses, that everything is wonderful, since mostly I review things that work well. There's lots of stuff I try that never pans out or doesn't work the first time right out of the chute. I won't give you the broken software reviews all the time, but I just wanted to make sure you knew that I wasn't faking it when I told you that something worked well. That's going to wrap it up for this week's installment of the NoSillaCast. As always, feedback is very welcome at allison@podfeet.com. So thanks for listening and stay subscribed.